This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Over five studio albums, the band Florence and the Machine have explored genres from pop to punk to soul, and their most recent record, Dance Fever, just came out.
I need my golden crown of sorrow, my bloody sword to swing, my empty hall to echo with grand self-mythology. I am no mother, I am no bride, I am king. I am no mother, I am no bride.
Their music can be both introspective and theatrical, poetic and confessional. At the center of it all is Florence Welch, the singer and main songwriter. My colleague John Seabrook says this: heartbreak and loneliness rarely feel as delightful and as inviting as in a Florence Welch song. Seabrook spoke with Florence Welch at the New Yorker Festival in 2019. She decided to go on a hiatus from performing after years of touring, but she sat down with John and played an acoustic set with Florence and the Machine.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's jump back to the beginning, of your career, which we're talking about a decade here, so it's really not a great deal of time, but you packed a lot into that decade, and you kind of hit the ground running. I thought we would sort of go through your life by talking about a few songs, your professional life. We're going to start with Dog Days Are Over. I feel like this was a song where you maybe first discovered your sound, or at least for me, it was when I first heard your sound, and maybe for a lot of us. So I wondered if you could talk a little generally about where this song came from and how it fit into what work you were doing at the time.
So I had been writing some songs, but because everything was on guitar, and I didn't know how to play guitar, so I just assumed I would be the singer in someone else's band, or I'd be a front woman, and I think there was a kind of internalized self-doubt as well. I didn't know. I'm not like a trained musician. I didn't have the attention span to sit and learn the piano or the focus. Mm. And I was good at singing. Mm. And I was like, I'm already good at this thing. So I would write they were kind of little gothic fairy tales, you know, it's so much like guilt and drama involved. I don't know what I was...
Starting a journal, sort of journaling and then moving into songs?
I think I was already trying to process. I just think from an early age, like I felt so much shame and I don't really know why. I don't know where that came from. And I think those songs were always a way of trying to process what I felt was wrong about me. I always felt very like... So oversensitive as a kid, and like I felt like other people had like a ticket to kind of get through life that I didn't know? And how did you get that thing? And everyone seems to have a map, and I don't. And I think these songs were a way of trying to express through these little metaphors how I felt and kind of beautify the things that had happened to me or that I'd done in a way to kind of own them. Mm-hmm. And the first song that I actually wrote, which you can tell because it's just an ascending scale, was Between Two Lungs.
Oh, yeah.
And that was kind of the first thing that I that sort of felt like it really came truly from me. And I was so excited by that. Then the next song that we wrote was Dog Days. That was like the first two. And I remember how they're not the most complicated chords, that, but because I'd never fucking played anything, I thought they were amazing. I was just like, I'm making this sound. Wow. Can you hear this? It was like, yeah, it's a fucking piano. Like, it makes that sound for everybody. But because I was the one, like, getting to put them in order and stuff, I just thought, like, this sounds incredible. And we didn't really have any equipment. Like, we stole a drum from someone. And we used, like, pens and stuff. And it was kind of, the feel of that song came from just a lot of enthusiasm, but not really any skill or equipment. So that's that's how it came about. Okay, you're ready?
He's ready.
We're ready.
Her happiness hit her like a train on a track. Coming towards her, stuck still, no turning back. She hit around corners and she hid under bed. With every bubble, she sank with a dream and washed it away down the kitchen sink. The dog days are over. The dog days are done. The horses are coming, so you better run. Run fast for your mother, run fast for your father, run for your children. Sisters and brothers, leave all your love and your longing behind. You can't carry it with you if you
You're on a bit of a hiatus at the present from touring. Can we talk about how that happened, where that came from?
Well, I've been touring since I was 21. I think I'm a person who works in extremes, and so I just didn't stop. I don't know how to relax. I think that's probably clear. But Lungs and Ceremonials was just sort of one... I don't know how long that was then, like 5 years of touring. And I'm not a natural traveler. Like, I'm not...
You don't like flying, I think, right?
Oh, my God. I'm so scared of
flying.
Which
is tough for an artist who is an international...
It's the worst. And I had hypnotism on it, and it wore off. Nobody told me that hypnotism wears off. Or I just think my anxiety is so powerful that it destroyed the hypnotism. It, like, defeated it. And then I had a break, and also a kind of breakdown, which is what happens when you don't stop touring for 5 years. Then when the touring stopped, all the structures that I'd been using... with touring, you're kind of very taken care of, so you could be quite a high-functioning fuck-up.
Right.
Which is what I was. Very high functioning, but kind of so self-destructive, right. And such a lack of any will to kind of take care of myself.
That gets me into the next subject. Here is drinking, which we both have in common. So after the success of Lungs, you were sort of thrown into the world of success and fashion. And when you read your interviews from that time, you're practically, in the interviews, you're falling apart. So I guess it's not surprising that with this life came drinking, but it got to a point where it was unmanageable or beyond.
Yeah, I mean, I had insane endurance. But also people would come up to me who I thought were like the craziest drinkers and drug takers I'd ever met and be like, whoa, you go harder than anyone I've ever met. I was like, oh my God. But yeah, I think it was hard. I think I'd grown up in South London, and that whole scene is like punk on a pirate ship, you know? It's sort of pirate folk, and it's kind of everyone fend for themselves, and the whole gig is like an extended drinking game where you just have to play in the middle. And that's kind of what I understood, is that that was rock and roll, and if you couldn't go the hardest, you were letting rock and roll down, and you were letting like these legendary people down. But I think really why I would stay out for so long was my, you know, that sense of shame I spoke about in the beginning?
Yeah.
That was there before any of the drinking and the drugs. Like, I already had that.
Yeah.
And then to escape that, you know, it would give me an escape from that. But then the things I did or the things I would say or the way I would treat people, it just confirmed the way that I'd felt as a kid. You know, it was just like, you are bad. There is something wrong with you. And then I would carry on trying to escape it in that way, but it would just keep getting worse. And if you've been doing that in whatever way since you were 14, by the time you get to 27, you're just... I just didn't want to feel that way anymore. And it was so repetitive. And at some point, the fun bit had gone.
Right.
And as much as I tried to get it back, I just couldn't. I think that's it. When the fun goes, it does not come back. The first year that I stopped, I felt like I'd really lost a big part of who I was and how I understood myself. And also I felt like I was like letting down rock and roll history because I couldn't cope. And I had to kind of rebuild from scratch a little bit. But the thing is that now, like, I don't know, I feel like it's almost like the idea of rock and roll that we had, like, we've seen it so many times and it doesn't end well. And I didn't want to be part of that story. But yeah, then I went back on tour for How Big, How Blue, How Beautiful after my break/breakdown. And that was kind of the first tour that I'd done sober. And yeah, it was amazing. And it really feels much more rock and roll than anything I ever did when I was great. Drinking. It's kind of like doing shows and connecting with people. And that, to me, especially with everything going on in the world, to be conscious and to be present and to really feel what's going on, even though it's painful, it feels like much more a truly reborn spirit of rock and roll. It feels like that's what it should be about right now.
That's beautiful.
Between a crucifix and the Hollywood sign, we decided to get hurt. Now there's a few things we have to burn. Set our hearts ablaze, and every city was a gift, and every skyline was like a kiss upon the lips, and I was making you weep in every skyline. How big, how blue, how beautiful. How big, how blue, how beautiful. And meanwhile, a man was falling from space. And every day I wore your face like an atmosphere on me, a satellite beside me. And meanwhile, a man was falling from space. As he hit the earth, I left this place, let the atmosphere surround me. Satellite beside me. What are we gonna do? We've opened the door and now it's all coming through. Tell me you see it too. We've opened our eyes and it's changing the view. Well, what are we gonna do? We've opened the door and now it's all.
That's Florence Welch performing with Rob Aykroyd on guitar and Tom Monger on harp. They played How Big, How Blue, How Beautiful. And before that, Dog Days Are Over. The new album by Florence and the Machine is called Dance Fever. Florence spoke with John Seabrook, a longtime staff writer of The New Yorker, in 2019.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.